humanity. Now he's under my feet, under my feet, under my feet, under my feet. Ain't gonna let the system walk all over me. Well, I went down to the landlord's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Oh, I went down to the landlord's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Now he's under my feet, under my feet, under my feet, under my feet. Ain't gonna let the system walk all over me. Well, I went down to the welfare office. I took back what they stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Oh, I went down to the welfare office. I took back what they stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Now they're under my feet, under my feet, under my feet, under my feet. Ain't gonna let the system walk all over me. Well, I went down to the governor's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back, took back my dignity. Took it back, took back my humanity. Oh, I went down to the governor's house and I took back what he stole from me. Took it back,
took back my dignity.
Took it back, took back my humanity. Now he's under my feet, under my feet, under my feet, under my feet. Ain't gonna let the system walk all over me.
And that was Ann Feeney. She passed from COVID. And I just wanted to share a little of this great labor organizer's work with you. I have on the line my guest with me, but I just want to check something. So hang on. Okay. All right. So this is Chris. The show is Peace and Justice. We're on with you every Friday from 11:30 to 1 with rotating hosts. And it is my pleasure to welcome Heather Hurwitz here from Cleveland. She is going to be our guest for this first half hour of the show. She's the author of Are We the 99%? The Occupy Movement, Feminism, and Intersectionality, a new book that has come out through Temple University. And a lot of work and time has gone into this book, and there's very interesting conclusions that are drawn that I think are very important, not just for our history, those of us who are activists, but also for the future. And that is the main important thing. But I wanted to tell you that Heather Mickey, excuse me, sorry, this is Chris, and I am just lost my earpiece, so let's go ahead without it. Heather Mickey Hurwitz is a lecturer of sociology and feminist scholar at Case Western Reserve University and a visiting researcher at the Cleveland Clinic. For nearly 20 years, she has been participating in and studying a variety of social movements in the U.S. and Global South, including feminist, anti-war, student, environmental, and Occupy movements. She analyzes contemporary urban protests and social movements using a feminist and intersectional lens. With a grant from the CWRU Freedom Center for Digital Scholarship, Hurwitz recently developed a digital Occupy archive of data that informed the book. The flyers, posters, newspapers, postcards, and other movement ephemera now are available freely online. Just a sec. Okay. So, Heather, are you with me?
I am, Chris. Thank you so much for that very kind introduction, and I'm so glad that you've found something good in the book. And wouldn't have found it valuable. I'm very honored.
Well, I'm appreciative that you took such a deep dive into the Occupy movement, and it's been a good 10 years now, and so a lot of us are very rusty on it. Your book made me think a lot about our local experiences here in Chico, California, but you focus mainly on urban centers, and I don't know if it always applies to us, but first I'd like you to refresh us on the history of the context of Occupy and what Occupy Wall Street was.
Sure. And it was a movement that began in the fall of 2011, so we're approaching the 10-year anniversary. The movement started, it was inspired by protests that were happening around the world, from the State House of Wisconsin to the Arab Spring, across the Middle East, the Indignados movement in Spain, the anti-austerity movements in Greece. So all of these movements really preceded Occupy, but inspired initially people in New York to get together and say, we want more democracy, we want economic equality, and we want a people's response to the Great Recession. And from the initial encampment in New York and a solidarity encampment in San Francisco, that same first, those first days, the movement spread around the world, and more than 1,000 town squares, and Chico being one of them, took up participating in the movement, camping out, and doing various other kinds of actions, initially for economic solidarity, but there was also a lot of other issues that different places took up.
Can you tell us about your research? What led you to do it? Also,
absolutely. I was watching the movement, and I was really interested in it. I wanted it to succeed. I was concerned about economic inequality and the economic downturn. I saw the effects as I was a graduate student at University of California in Santa Barbara. There were furloughs. There was a lot of unemployment. There were a lot of poor job prospects. But then I also became interested in the movement because I wondered, could all of these very diverse people, diverse in terms of ages, generations, people from who had participated in the civil rights movement and the New Left and the anti-war movements of the 50s, 60s, 70s feminist movements were gathering in this movement with millennial activists and young people taking up social media activism for really the first time in a broad way in this country. And so I wondered how that was working and how could people build unity, or were there some fissures or divisions possibly happening? And then I also put on a feminist hat, so I really kind of came at the project in three different ways. And I heard reports online about sexism, sexual harassment, racism, the marginalization of women of color who wanted to take on leadership roles in the movement. And so as a feminist, I was curious, what are feminists saying in response to this? How are feminists getting involved? And I sought out to interview especially women and queer people of a range of racial and ethnic backgrounds who were not featured really as prominently and in some places at all in the media. A lot of the media had interviewed white men. And I knew that there was another story there, and that really launched my research.
And it seemed that the fact that the rallying cry was, we are the 99%, which was the key slogan of Occupy, kind of guaranteed that what you said, your thesis seems to be, that Occupy strove to end inequalities, but often replicated social hierarchies, and that's what I want to dive into. You talk about intersectional analysis and the intersectional imperative. Can you describe that to our listeners? What does that mean?
So the 99% was a basis of unity and saying that everyone is part of this kind of big class. If you're not the 1%, there's a reason to come together. But lumping everyone together into that 99% really rubbed some people the wrong way, and they felt kind of invisible in that. There was a lot of unity with that message of the 99%, but there was also a kind of erasure. Individuals experience inequality in unique ways, depending on their particular race, gender, sexuality, their particular experiences of class even, their age, etc. And so the intersectional approach says, if we only analyze class, or if we only create a social movement on the basis of class unity, we're missing the unique and particular oppressions or privileges that someone experiences when they're of a particular identity. If they are someone who's black or straight or female or Hispanic or white, they're going to have a unique experience of class. And the intersectional perspective asks us to bring together gender, race, class, and other kinds of oppressions and think about those and act on them.
And you talk about conflicts, especially about these collective identities. Can you give us some examples of that so people can understand more, like what it was like to be encamped or sleeping at night in these areas and using things like mic check, and you know who kind of benefited from the way things were set up?
Right. So within the movement, there were a lot of different kinds of committees and ways that people could participate. And especially some women and feminists in the movement felt like their views were not being really heard, that thinking about, let's say, gender and women's particular experiences of the Great Recession were not coming enough to the fore. And so they created this kind of separate working group or committee to put forward those views and to also have those groups be led by women and feminists. And a similar thing happened with many black activists who were advocating that the Occupy message should have more analysis of race, how racism exacerbates economic inequalities. And when that message wasn't taken up fully and centrally, there were a lot of other groups that they formed, that a lot of black activists and people of color led, like the People of Color Working Group or the Decolonize movement, which was kind of grew out of a lot of this tension in saying we really need to center the experience of people of color, indigenous people. We need to have a movement that centers that experience and makes racial justice much more prominent. And they even argued we should change the whole name of the movement from Occupy to Decolonize. There are many more examples of this in the book. There was a lot of tension that made the movement very vibrant and exciting, and at the same time, a lot of infighting about many different of these issues.
Yeah, and a lot of people cleaved off from the main Occupy Wall Street because of those grievances. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nowhere else more apparent than with LGBTQ activists who had to submerge themselves into white heteronormative masculinity, which seemed to be the the baseline of Occupy. How did groups empower themselves as they worked within and on the side of the main Occupy General Assemblies?
Well, groups like LGBTQ persons and especially trans activists, there were a number of trans women who really took a powerful role in creating a lot of the media for Occupy Wall Street and also creating trans feminist groups and alliances and contributing to many of just the feminist groups that were inclusive of people of many sexualities and genders and races. So there was a lot of organizing that happened online. It seems maybe second nature to us 10 years after the movement. Of course we're going to create, you know, Facebook events and organize online and have Twitter accounts to publicize the kinds of actions we're doing. But all of it was new back when the Occupy movement began. And activists found a place to act in Facebook groups and creating kind of forums to air their grievances about the wider movement and start to create a safe place to really share the kind of movement that they wanted, a kind of ideal of a movement that wasn't just about class, but thought about LGBTQ issues and prioritized them, prioritized a transgender day of remembrance, was a space to celebrate gay culture, etc. And so online was really important. And then in some of the large encampments, they actually made like sleeping spaces that were separate or tents that were dedicated only for queer people and women.
Yeah. And you talk about this 24/7 committee because there were so many homeless people involved in Occupy. And I think that in our community, that is one thing I do remember is the strains with that. And you write that you talked to people who said, you have no idea what it's like. Many lacked consciousness about poverty, homelessness, and joblessness. I mean, many people that showed up for Occupy, as diverse as it was, were middle-class white people. Did you do more about homeless people or about class divisions?
Thanks for asking me about this, Chris, because I know that I've been listening to your show, and I know that there's a good amount of activism and concern about unhoused persons in Chico. And I was wondering, actually, how big of a role unhoused persons played in the Chico movement. And I think you're right that this deserves more attention. They called people who were homeless who participated in the movement, in some locations, the 24/7 committee, because being unhoused, there was nowhere they could go home to after the protest or the march or even to get cleaned up or go away from the encampment and have a break. They were there 24/7, really holding it down and giving the movement a presence. And this is kind of maybe an unsung or a part of the movement that needs, I think, more recognition, is how important homeless persons were to the encampments and the kind of education about being unhoused that they offered to people who didn't know about this and the politics and the efforts of homeless persons to get more shelters and support, and just kind of even what it's like to live on the street or in an urban center. There was some of that learning that happened, but there was a lot of tension as well. Many of these encampments, the protest encampments, started in places where a lot of homeless people were already living, and without so much concern for that being their home, you know, the park or a certain city block being their home already. And I think it's a moment for future activists to learn from and think about, you know, maybe unhoused persons don't want to participate in the movement, or if some of them do, you know, how do we recognize this home that is theirs on the streets and be respectful and have a, build a, more of a relationship with homeless persons?
Yeah, those are good points. You know, talk about inclusivity frames in the movement and media and culture, and some of this was really eye-opening to me because I was pretty uncritical about, you know, some of the clever things that Occupy put up. You know, I didn't have an analysis really of the skinny white woman on the bull or any of the rest of it. Can you talk about a little bit about how frames matter in media and culture in terms of who it speaks to and that?
You know, in the moment, in many ways, I was also like you, and I think a lot of us were at this. The social media and the print media and the art that came out of this movement, it was so creative. So many different contributions. It was incredible to see the images and flyers, and there was an openness for citizen journalists to get involved in this media. But as I collected it and analyzed it and kind of stood back and looked at some of the patterns that people were using similar images over and over, starting to think about what did those images mean, I found that there were a lot of messages that were kind of really prioritizing aggression or whiteness. And on the other hand, there were some messages that were more intersectional, trying to be inclusive of people of different races and ethnicities, or create moments in the movement where people could really talk about like the everyday lives of women and what they were going through to support their families and whether potential sexual harassment, and even talk about what it means to be people of various gender identities. And so I've actually collected a lot of these media flyers. You mentioned it earlier in the show in the Occupy archive, because I think it is important to, kind of after this moment and really after any kind of activist push, to stand back and think, you know, how are these messages being received? And the archive that I've created allows the general public, of course, students and professors and teachers, to kind of look through those images and say, you know, what does this really convey? Which of these images do I feel could be a really inclusive message and speak to, you know, our movement wants to have a diverse participation, and this kind of image would represent us best? Or look at some other images, you know, after the fact, and just step back and say, yeah, you know, a charging bull kind of wrapped up in chains, and, you know, maybe that's not a really message of freedom right. for our movement, or a message of inclusivity. We might want a different image. So that's there. There's a link to the archive from my website. That's probably the easiest way to get there.
And we're speaking to Heather McKee Hurwitz, H-U-R-W-I-T-Z. Her book is Are We the 99%? The Occupy Movement, Feminism, and Intersectionality. And we are going to run out of time, and I had at least five more questions. So I'm going to jump to the last one, which is, to me, the most important thing, because we need to learn from Occupy. And you talk about fulfilling this intersectional imperative. What do we need to do to succeed if another Occupy comes along in our lifetime, which it surely will?
We need to think about inequalities as multiple, as race, class, gender, sexuality inequalities. We need to have representations of people who are in the middle of these various forms of oppression, and really talk about the experiences that those people are going through and name them also as a way of saying we recognize this range of experiences and we want to include people. And the speaking and thinking and doing things intersectionally is an opening for building coalitions and working with people and groups who also see the problems that we're being activist about in a new way and in a diverse way, in a way that we can include people of a range of different perspectives.
Heather Hurwitz, we have to wind up, but I do suggest that people read this book. There's a section on leadership, especially, that I felt was so important for people to have their voices heard and in for the future of organizing. And do you want to have a last word, Heather, about what you think the most important thing of your many years of work analyzing Occupy Wall Street has been?
Well, there's a lot of takeaways. I'll just, on the leadership note, I'll say I think we need more diverse leaders, and it's not that they're not there. It's that we have to change how we think of leaders as legitimate, who we see as an authority that we want to follow, and we have to open our views to that. And I think that's one of the things that Occupy kind of showed us. The leaders are there, but we need to change who we are as followers to become more open to a more diverse leaders. There's a lot more I'd love to talk with you about.
I know.
And, you know, thank you so much for having me on, Chris.
Sure. I just want to tell.
It's a great time to reflect on this.
It is, and maybe we should do it again before the year is out, but I want to tell people that I will archive this on the KZFR website. You'll be able to get to the book. There's a 20% discount, I noticed, from Temple Press. So those of you who are low income in these times might be able to afford the book, Are We the 99%? The Occupy Movement, Feminism, and Intersectionality. I want to thank you, Heather Hurwitz, so much for this important work.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for your work on this show as well.
Yeah, peace to you. Bye-bye.
Peace. Bye-bye.
Okay, I'm going to go on to our next guest. I wanted to announce that Ecotopia is doing something different on Tuesday, February 16th from 5 to 6. They'll feature a pre-recorded interview with the hosts, Susan and Stephen Chudy, conducted by KZFR programmer Gail Kimball. Tune in to hear the Chudy's mouth off on environmental issues rather than asking polite questions of other people, which is what they usually do. They're quite polite. So also, please listen to our other public affairs programs here at KZFR. And as I rattle my papers, I want to thank our underwriters, who we could not do this without. I'd like to thank first Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling education and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when it's available, at the Thursday night market, maybe this summer, who knows, and the Saturday farmers market. For more information, you can visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. I'd also like to thank Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farm Star Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com, and on Facebook. The phone number to order is 343-2056. And also Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned, operated, and argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves but drink with others. So it is just about straight up noon. This is FM 90.1, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I'm going to put on a little Sweet Honey and the Rock from their album Sacred Ground.
Child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. We are a grandmother's prayers. We are a grandmother's dreamings. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We are mothers of courage, fathers of time, daughters of dust, sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy, brothers of love, lovers of light, and builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith, makers of peace, wisdom of ages. We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreamings. We are the breath of the ancestors. We are the spirit of God. We're mothers of courage and fathers of time. We're daughters of dust and sons of great visions. We're sisters of mercy and brothers of love. We're lovers of light and builders of nations. We're seekers of truth and keepers of faith. We're makers of peace and wisdom of ages. We
Sweet Honey and the Rock. Wonderful song, and I really, really appreciate the fact that we have young people coming up who are of that sacred ground. And I have on the line with me Maranatha Saint. She is a Butte College student majoring in film and media studies. She's 19 years old from Albuquerque, New Mexico, with a background in community service. She was recently in production with Josh Edwards at Chico Beloved Community for the first virtual Martin Luther King Jr. Day. She first began producing and media studies after 8 years of working in the field in cooperation with Game Amp. She is both a dedicated student and a community leader. We'll also be hearing from her brother, Ife Saint. He is a Butte College student pursuing chemistry and mathematics. He's 20 years old and has a history in Game Amp as well. He's an activist and leader in his community, coming from the Haitian community in Albuquerque, New Mexico also. Additionally, adding assistance to the smoothness of the Martin Luther King Jr. virtual production. Welcome to KZFR, Maranatha. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much, Chris, for having us.
Yeah, and I'm very pleased and honored to have you. You know, this is Black History Month, and you come from a family who are very international. They have deep ties to the Caribbean and African cultures. And can you tell us about your youth growing up in a culture of artists and dancers who are so rooted in African culture as well as the cultural diaspora?
Yes, of course. Thank you for bringing that up. My childhood was very open-minded and beautiful. Very young, me and my brother started dancing and drumming with our auntie, our auntie family member, Mia, and with our auntie, Shirley Saint. It was a beautiful lead into what our culture was and kind of understanding and being very proud of where we come from and how hard our family has worked. And being able to just see that one light in our culture made us very open to understanding and realizing how different we all are. So,
yeah. Yes, and you also have the benefit of having lived in New Mexico and in the richness of the Southwest culture. And I was wondering what it's like for you coming from New Mexico to Chico, California. Was that a shock, or what was it like to transition to here?
It definitely was somewhat of a culture shock, I have to say, in the terms of, you know, when you come from New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Haitians, and there's a lot of Hispanic culture and Native culture, and kind of being so open to that so young, it made me want to seek that more in Chico. And small parts of Chico deeply remind me of Albuquerque, actually. And it's beautiful to see the art and the richness that Chico is now, you know. So it was nice to be able to, like, that transition was nice for me. It is a little different, although, but, you know, getting used to it, I really appreciate coming from both aspects of my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I imagine it could be head spinning at times because there's so much what I would call whiteness here. And you know, kind of a not a culture void at all. It's there. It's just that you have to find it.
Yes.
So it seems anyway.
And so, that was a big part of when I was young, my mother introduced me to the youth, the Chico Peace and Justice Center, mm-hmm. where I was able to have a workshop. Me and my brother were able to go to a workshop, and it was nice to see that Native culture in Chico and a part of Chico, but kind of needing to be discovered more and, you know, explored more with the art and expression.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, it's important too. You know, my co-host Corey Hunt always says, you know, whenever he starts a show, you know, that it's on occupied Machupta land, and I fail to do that sometimes, and then I kind of, I mean, always I forget, I fail to do it because I'm so scattered sometimes. But it's important that you bring it up, and that it's, you know, it's part of what our process has to be, to recognize you know, everyone and make sure that we see and understand their importance. One of the things that you put yourself really wholeheartedly into was this assistant directorship of the Martin Luther King Unity Virtual Celebration on Restoration, Reconciliation, and Resilience that took place on January 18th. I know a lot of work went into this. Can you describe your process in working within a committee of committed activists and taking a leadership role as a young woman, and also being a videographer, being behind the camera for many of the interviews and dance performances?
Yeah, of course. It was really nice, you know, seeing as I had just started taking film classes and now I'm in, you know, finally, as, you know, I'm getting old enough to take these courses and see it full-handedly. It was also a big part of being able to, like, bring that culture back with me to Chico. The whole process with the MLK group was beautiful. I couldn't have asked for a better directorship with Josh Edwards and Maria and Ruth and Emily and so many others who put their whole heart into MLK for so long. And now leading it into the process of, you know, brown and black men and women to kind of bring it on, I felt very empowered to bring a message and build a movement. And that's a huge part of being in Game Amp. So I really appreciated that chance to see everyone at work and put our intentions and purpose towards a beautiful process. Admittedly, it was a little more difficult in terms of quarantine, but it came out nice, and the work that we did was worth it.
Yeah, yeah, it showed. It was so rich. There was so much there. It was, you know, for me, every segment was so interesting. And your brother Ife, I think, is there, and he wanted to also talk about his, not just his experience, but he was part of this. Your whole family sounds like they were part of this production. I was wondering if Ife would like to give his opinion about how it went, what the challenges were, what he particularly liked about it.
I'm here.
Hi.
Just introduce myself. I'm Ife again.
Welcome.
So a lot of the challenges in making the MLK video in the Unity group was just like, you know, there's always, I guess, attention to detail and making sure we're on top of everything we're supposed to do. But the group actually helped us out a lot. Like, we had a bunch of adults on the call every week, you know, helping us, guiding us to what we should be focusing on, and just helping us, like, emotionally wise, because this is a lot for us on our shoulders. This is something we do super often, and just having the community behind us and people that worked on it in the past years to kind of help us make build our vision was a great help. And I don't think we would have done it the same without them.
Yeah, it was wonderful, as I said, but I do hope that people get to see it, because I know that a lot of people probably missed it, and I went back on and watched it again in preparation for this show. And can you tell us the links? I'm looking for them now, but please tell us the link.
My sister has it on deck right here. She should know.
Okay.
Yes, Help with Skip, we were able to get it out. I believe it's
YouTube link.
Beloved MLK Unity 2021.
Yeah, and it's on YouTube. That's where I saw it again. Yeah, there it is. MLK Unity Chico 2021. For our listening audience, this is the heart of our community, and it's all, you know, if you missed it, give yourself the opportunity to see it. I mean, these were, you know, young people that really took the reins and did something really important. Every year it's wonderful, but this was under such, you know, different circumstances, having to do it virtually.
Yes, and a huge thanks to BCAC TV and Skip for really being able to put the word out there on media and visual and put this out where it needed to be, you know, so.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you about the, you know, I could say political chaos, or I could say the murder of George Floyd. I could talk about isolation and concerns about COVID. I mean, it's been such a, you know, the whole thing with Trump. I wanted to get your perspective, because I don't think young people's perspectives is out there at all, especially people of color. If you can recall back a year ago, what's changed for you, and what's been positive and negative about what we've experienced? If you can say that in any kind of a succinct way, it's a lot.
Yeah, that is a huge kind of a huge part of how I feel young people, and you know, myself and my brother included, are trying to understand where the world is kind of going. And how
and how we've perceived this last year is just a lot going on constantly.
That's why a huge part of us, you know, we're appreciative that we're able to team up with Youth Nexus and really give light to different things that need more exposure, such as education and encouragement and expression, really.
Yeah. And you're involved in a couple of things, Maranatha. I was speaking to Maranatha Saint and her brother Ife Saint, and you work on something called Emotion, and I hadn't heard of it before, but I was wondering if you could describe it and talk about your relationship to it and how it's helped you, if it has.
Emotion, what it's about, first of all, what the E stands for, there's actually five E's. It's education, exercise, encouragement, enlightened eating, and expression. We find these topics to be very helpful. And what what it basically deals with is what we've been seeing is some of the hard struggles throughout this quarantine time. Education, first of all, everyone knows what that was like when we were coming out of summer. We didn't know what we were going to do for school,
mm-hmm.
and how this would all be set up. We're on online classes, and it's all different now. And exercise, of course, everyone's kind of been homebodies. And if you haven't, well, you know, people can't stay shut in for too long of a time. And so our whole premise was basically helping with mental illness and all these factors that you must think about when you're trying to keep yourself healthy despite the outside environment. So, you know, of course, you're on education, you're in your classes, there's the exercise, you have to exercise every day. But encouragement also is, without encouragement, without people being positive around you, mental awareness cannot be, like, solved. Mental awareness basically just means that you can be more aware of how things are changing your mood or maybe affecting you without you even realizing it. Because people nowadays, maybe they don't realize it, but, you know, emotions seem to be down or running high in stressful situations or just down. And people are like, when will this all change? When will we be back to how we were before? And this seriously affects younger generations because, as far as they know, they don't know when how things can like this can come back and everyone be well again. So this is a scary moment for, like, for instance, people are starting high school and ages between like 13 and 18. It's just like this is all learning about the world, and as the world is today, it's very hard to really get out there. So this is kind of our reason for our trying to spread the awareness and get more of a dialogue going about how this is affecting us all. And if I may ask, can you repeat the question? I'm not sure I've even answered it.
No, I think whatever you said was fabulous. And what I was wondering is your involvement with it. I mean, Maranatha, I think, made a film about it. And I was wondering, in terms of our listeners, how could they be helped by this program? Because it sounds like it's pretty well developed.
Yes, actually, Ife was a huge part of the film. That's why, you know, he's a real part of the brains and the heart of it. And personally, I know that for the viewers and the people listening, one thing that we can do is start being able to check in, for one, before with one another and with ourselves as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be coming out soon, sometime in February. We will be putting it out on social media, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. And a part of it is being able to reach out with one another and ourselves, our children, our siblings, and understand where we're at and understand that sometimes it's okay to not be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I honor this work that you're doing, and I will try to promote it if you keep me in the loop. And I wanted to have enough time also to ask you about the other project that you both seem to have grown up in and be very integral to, which is called Game Amp. What is that?
Game Amp is guerrilla art marketing, media mentoring, education. It's kind of like it's like an all-encompassing almost not production, but like movement. My mom created it when I was very young. She was like going to college when I was like a toddler, and she was helping people and changing their lives in New Mexico. We know a man by the name of Travis in New Mexico. He started agriculture, and he only was doing that through my mom, who helped him basically uplift a community. And he started a farm in Albuquerque, and we've gone there to help out. And so this is like a long running thing in our family of us trying to go to a community and help out in any way we can. My sister has some more words too.
In the organization, and part of that is being able to focus on the expressional side of this. And that's why the film is huge for us, because it's part of our lives of being able to, hey, you know, how are we feeling? Let's put it out in art. Let's put it out in music. Let's dance to it. Let's figure this out and outwardly be able to, you know, see how we're doing. And with Game Amp, it's been a huge part of my life because it's been able to teach me that me and somebody that I barely even know are more alike than we think, because we're still people who, at the end of the day, are trying to figure ourselves out. And through that basic human needs of understanding and love and open-mindedness is a blissness, to say the least.
And how do people find out about it more?
We have a website, gayamp.org. You can look it up. You can see some of the projects that we have been working on. And we are willing to work on more community projects. Of course, you can reach out to us on Instagram. It's going to be connected through the website. And yeah, in any way, shape, or form of being able to bring our community together, we are here for it.
Yeah, it sounds so dynamic. And, you know, I look back at some of your work, Maranatha, because I didn't know Ife, but you have done some really important interviews. You interviewed a man who, Dr. Franz Collin, who does critical work in the Miami, Florida area. I mean, you are so ahead of your years. And are you going to continue to be a videographer? Is that the direction your life is going to take you, or do you have a sense of it?
Yes, being able to interview Franz Collin was a huge impact on me, because it really opened that light to, wow, I do like to get this word out for people and developments and foundations such as the Collin Cares Foundation. Yes, located in Miami, Florida.
Yeah, say more about that, can you?
Yes, of course. His foundation is really trying to approach mental health awareness and education, especially towards African-American communities, Hispanic, Caribbean, and LGBTQ communities. A huge part of their foundation is to seek and dispel negativity towards mental health, you know, providing guidance for youth and understanding of real, you know, real situations that people are going through.
Yeah. So Collin, Collin Cares, is how people could find out about his work. Yeah, that was an incredible interview. And so Black history is being written every day by people like you, who are building on the shoulders of ancestors and their living culture, their families, and the work that, you know, the momentum that you've built up. Can you describe what you would want people to be focusing on in this particular time in order to create the world we all need, a safe, sane world?
I can describe us moving forward as in seeing a lot more people in my demographic in science and math. I want to be an engineer myself, mm-hmm. Or I'm working in chemistry. But it's just really nice to see people that look like me doing so much in the world. And what I can say to first us getting there is, like, if you want to be the change, if you want to see a change, be the change. And I know that's kind of, like, ripped off. I have heard it, and it's just straight from Michael Jackson.
It really rings
true, because most people want to change in some aspect of their life, but it's really hard to do it yourself. And so even for emotion, what we'd love to see is people being more outright, you know, encouraging towards one another. You know, there's always conflicts and problems in the world, but discussion without negativity always helps. That's like the first step. And so just being more educated on matters, being more exercising your right to help and change things in the community. Because me, myself, I don't know how much I can help people in my life, but my mom and my family helping me out with getting me in these projects where we just meet a bunch of new faces in Chico and Yuba and Oroville, and just being able to get out there. Because if more people did that, because even I can do it, and I have, like, social anxiety, if more people can do that, that will build a better future. And so that's just what I want to see in the world. And I know people are already working on it, but the point of the message is to keep giving it so more people come along. So that's what I can say.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Maranatha?
I have to jump off what my brother says, and in the own point of understanding and being okay with, you know, because a lot of the times, especially in our young generation of seeing Instagram and Twitter and all this stuff, you're like, whoa, oh, I'm trying to be this perfect thing and trying to reach this thing, and it's so difficult. And just being okay with knowing your steps and knowing yourself to, while you're trying to accomplish these, to step back and check in. And that's a huge part of what I've been seeing, even, you know, in some of the adults that I've, and professionals that I've been able to interview and be a part of, like, wow, a huge part of their success and their story is at one moment they knew that, hey, it's okay to talk to family. It's okay to talk to myself, to be like, hey, I need a break. I need time. I need to focus. And learning a lot, the process of kind of, you know, transitioning to adulthood, that has taught me to even reaching out to my younger cousins or my siblings or, you know, younger children, like, hey, you're going to be going through a lot, and it's okay to really know that somebody's there for you and somebody cares for you and somebody is able to listen, helping others, you know, and being helped by others as well, being okay with that. So kind of in the process of, you know, but that's a huge part of trying to reach this goal and this community outreach and trying to bring our community together. You know, not all of it is big steps. Some of it is the little breakdown steps and the little things that really push it forward. And, you know, such as the Peace and Justice Center, like, that was a huge part of my youth, you know, being able to go there and meet people such like Pedal Press in our community, who actually was a huge part of bringing this project forward and, you know, helping me understand more that our community is one of us is all of us, so...
And we just want to keep that momentum going, basically.
Yeah. So what is...
Also,
what's
we
next?
Forgot to say...
Yeah, go ahead.
Also, we forgot to say, back to Pedal Press, they helped us a lot, even with the program when we first learned about them. And through this emotions production, we got help from them again. I drew some emotion masks or just some designs, and they helped us out by putting them on masks. So earlier you talked about what people could do to help us out. And I guess not to be a Scrooge McDuck or anything, but there's always a monetary value to help us with our production. And so we're going to give out these masks that just have our logo on it. And they'll be pretty cheap and all that. So, oh, not cheap as in they're double-sided. They're the breathable kind that don't blow out a flame. You know, we wouldn't sell a mask that doesn't work. But anyway, I kind of went on a tangent because I forgot to big them up. I know they want to hear that we do love them, and they helped us out so much. But, yeah, that's just something I didn't want to end without saying.
Yeah, thanks to Pedal Press. So, yeah, they're wonderful. And I also love them, and I will put them in with the archive of how people to get hold of them. I think they're just on Facebook. But I want to thank you both for being my guests today on the Peace and Justice program. We've been speaking with Maranatha Saint and her brother Ife Saint, and they are leaders in our community, and so grateful for you and your family that you moved here for whatever reason from New Mexico. And I'm just so grateful, can't tell you enough about how much I embrace everything you've said today. Has been so important. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us, Chris. Thank you so much for, you know, allowing the word to get out there. And thank you for your time.
Yeah. All right. All right.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Take care, you guys. Bye.
You too. Bye. Bye.
All right. You're listening to the Peace and Justice program. This is Chris. I'm programming the second and fourth Fridays, and so I will take a week off, but Jesse Kearns, Reverend Jesse Kearns, will be with you next Friday, 11:30 to 1. I wanted to let people know about a PBS special that's coming up that I thought was important for Black History Month. It's important for all of us to understand The Importance of the Black Church. It's a four-hour series with Henry Louis Gates Jr., and it airs on the 16th and 17th on PBS. I'm sure it will re-air also and be available after those dates. So I'd like to get on to my next guest. I'm going to put on some Toshi Reagan, and this is the title cut, Justice. Here we go. Of course, I lied about that. Hang on, just a sec. Toshi Reagan. And this is Chris, Peace and Justice Program, and I have on the line with you Joshua Edwards. Josh is a former KZFR programmer, which I didn't know before. He had a show called The Kickback, and he's also a hip-hop artist. He's programmed on KKXX, a Christian hip-hop station, and KOYO, which is 107.1 FM, which is a low-powered station in Oroville. And it represents the voice of the African-American Family and Cultural Center in Oroville. A show he co-hosted is called People Are Talking About It, So We Are Too, about the pandemic from a mental health perspective, is on KOYO. And so that is, I think, continuing. I want to ask him about that. But Josh Edwards graduated from Los Angeles Film School with his bachelor's degree in graphic design. He is the African-American Community Engage Coordinator for the California Health Collaborative in Chico and was instrumental in the passage of a flavored tobacco ban in Oroville, as well as creating a vaping prevention PSA for our service area. His business is JE Photography and Production. Welcome, Josh, to the Peace and Justice Show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, I just interviewed Maranatha Saint and her brother Ife, and we talked a little bit about the Martin Luther King Unity Group and this year's virtual event for the celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And you were the lead on that. You, the video director, and of this Creating Beloved Community annual celebration of Dr. King. And I'd like to hear from your perspective, what were the challenges and opportunities of going virtual?
Oh, I mean, trying to do a virtual event definitely has a lot of challenges. It's just, you know, one is just making sure that you choose a good day and time to make sure everyone's, you know, sitting down to watch it. But this year, you know, there was, you know, like every year, we have a lot of people who are willing to contribute and be a part of it. And this year was, you know, the same. And so it's just trying to get everyone's voice and message heard, but also, you know, create something that's going to hold people's attention, you know, virtually, because, you know, it's tough these days to get everyone to continuously, you know, log online and watch something online, because everyone's doing that now. So competing with a lot of different events. So, you know, just organizing and getting everyone's voice and message heard was one of the tough things, but it was also one of the rewarding things, because you hear a lot of different stories, heard a lot of different things that the community is doing between members, artists, and organizations. So just really hearing, you know, the work being done behind closed doors is really great to hear and inspiring and motivating, but it's also, you know, encouraging to, you know, be able to get that message out to people so they can also see it and hear a little bit about what people are doing. So, you know, hopefully, you know, it motivated people and got them inspired to get up and do something. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you've worked with the Martin Luther King Unity Group for 8 years. You usually lead the rally, and then you come back and you film the event. And what was, you know, for me as a participant, you know, I miss being in the church. I miss the you know, hearing the choir live and the different elements of the performances that people gave, like readings and stuff. But I also felt like the online really worked, because you were able to get people in their gardens and in different hip hop, like in the one that you did in front of the Dorothy Johnson Center. How did you decide about all these components and bringing all this together?
Well, you know, it was a group, you know, MOK Unity. We all united together and came up with a great game plan, and, you know, really sat down and really wanted to highlight what this town and community has to offer, especially with the African-American community. You know, just highlight the different landmarks and places that really mean a lot to our community. And, you know, being able to point out different things, and even outside of the African-American community, I mean, Chico and Butte County just has so much to offer, so many different landmarks and so many places that it's just, you know, people come around the world to see. So it was just, you know, we really wanted to make sure to highlight all that. So it was, you know, when the theme of the event really helped drive that as well, you know, just restoring our community and restoration, you know, resilience, stuff like that. So AME Church was a great point to start off with, especially since it's being rebuilt right now. So that was kind of like the centerpiece. And from there, just kind of, you know, made everything else come together.
Yeah, you were quoted as being inspired by this quote by John Lewis, who you dedicated the event to. "We may not have chosen the time, but the time has chosen us." What did that feel like to you to, you know, to be in the steps of this great man and you know, all this responsibility that you had for it? What was your state going into it?
You know, it's scary, but it's also, you know, just very humbling and rewarding just to continue to do work that, you know, pushes that message. You know, so many times people think that you have to prepare and plan and just be, you know, make things happen. And sometimes, you know, just the time calls for you and you just have to be willing to answer the call. I tell a lot of people that it's not, you know, about how many opportunities you get, but how many you take. And so just being able to have another opportunity to push a message and a story that just continues to motivate the older people and the younger generation is something that, you know, is easy to get behind for me. So, I just appreciate being able to continue to do work like this.
Yeah, and you drew it back to Dr. King his life. You, I think I have a quote from you. We all have a purpose that can be used to improve our lives and the lives around us. So hopefully everyone can grasp the message in this, and that yeah. this was something that Dr. King was probably thinking in his time too. Is that right? Yeah. yeah. So, you know, one of the things about hip hop I'd like to understand better, because, you know, even when I called you, I said, is what you did hip hop? Is that, you know, I'm like so yes. clueless. And, but both you and my co-host, who Corey Hunt goes by Hemp C, yeah. Did hip hop, and it was so effective in the production of this work. There's ways of poetry that comes. How do you do that spoken word poetry? What is your process?
So my process with music, I mean, it is poetry, and that's how I started, by just doing some poetry back in the day. Matter of fact, one the Miss Person, she was a teacher at Rosedale when I was in first grade, and you know, another one, a pillar of our community, mm-hmm. who just recently passed last year. She was also one of the videos dedicated to at the end. She got us started in poetry. And then, you know, with all kids and music, the love of music, I fell in love with putting it to a beat. And it's just, you know, life experiences, just things that I go through, things that I see. So my process is just living life and letting it all happen, and just really walking through it with my head up and eyes open, and taking things for what it is and understanding what can be. And so I think with that, you know, it's just finding something that, you know, finding a beat or a blast of music or whatever to go with it, and then, you know, just let the writing start. But it's really just all heartfelt and, you know, what I go through personally. So yeah, that's kind of my process, is just once again, not plan it. You know, most of the time I try to sit down and force the song to come out, and it doesn't quite come out. And even the song I did for the MLK event, it fits so right for the event and for the time that we're in. It was called Last Hope, and I actually wrote that song a couple years ago. That song, there was a word, a line in there where, you know, I spoke about I can't breathe, as George Floyd said, but that was originally written when during the Eric Garner situation. So, you know, it's those moments that sparked that kind of, you know, song and message. And you know, this year, even though I did try to write something new, it didn't work out, because that song was, I think, just perfectly fit for this moment. But, you know, usually that's how it works. When the moment feels right and the film is there, that's how the song comes out.
Yeah, it really was a perfect song. So we're talking to Josh Edwards, and we're discussing the Martin Luther King Jr. Day production that he was the lead videographer and planner and doer of this year, with a committee, of course. You can find the information. It's MLK Unity Chico 2021. If you missed the actually seeing it on the day, and I'm sure many people did, because the nature of this virtual is people come in and out, you know, they don't really get to see the whole thing, or they can't get the link. There were some problems when we started, you know, on time. And so anyway, I hope that people will take advantage of this time during a Black History Month to get to know your community better by watching this virtual, this gift that was given to us by Josh Edwards and the many people on the MLK Unity group board. I didn't say that well, but I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your life. You grew up in Chico. You were raised here. And I was, you just mentioned Eric Garner and George Floyd. And I was wondering, as a Black man, what observations or concerns would you like to share with our listeners?
You know, it's just one of the things, like, especially living here, growing up here, is people have to understand that there's a lot of different perspectives in life, different lives that people live. And you know, I do see a lot of support in the community, but yet I also see, you know, a lot of non-supporters and people who stay true to their beliefs and their what they, you know, what they believe in. And my message for people is just to listen to each other. You know, we all have a different life perspective and come from different backgrounds and places, and no one knows everything. But we all can help somebody with the information that we know. And you know, especially with film and things like that. And I don't know. I'm sure everyone's watching this trial going on, but we can see, you know, how important video and just having a voice is, and stepping out and then being a part of the community and part of the solution rather than the problem. We see how helpful that is. You know, we don't always get the right outcome that we're looking for, but we are making progress. And so I know sometimes it looks bleak and I get frustrated at times, but through this MLK video and some of the work that I've been doing, especially work with Maranatha and Ife, the younger, you know, it's been, like I said, I've been doing this for 8 years, and having, you know, a younger group come up, it's motivating and inspiring. And, you know, through this whole voting process, a lot of the young generation, you know, stepped up and led the movement. And, no, I think even though it's tragic that there's been these deaths, it has awakened a lot of people and inspired people, and we're seeing that throughout the country right now. A lot of people are going to work, and you know, Georgia turning blue is a big deal. You know, we have, you know, have got a few things going, but you know, a lot more work to do. Definitely.
Yes, exactly. And I know you filmed the Concerned Citizens for Justice press conference the other day about the police shooting of another mentally ill person, and I know that must have made you have pause for thought as we continue to move through all the information that is coming out about police complicity with white racist tropes and groups and all the rest of it. Our country is really, really balanced on some ugliness and some beauty. Yep. It seems like we're very divided, and I think what you said is so important, to just, you know, pretty much push forward with the good. I mean, more or less, to very simply rephrase it. This is Black History Month, and I wanted to get your take on reflections that you have about those who went before and who we depend on now for wisdom and guidance. You know, the people that we're learning about, the people that went through the erasure of an educational system that we never really learned Black history, but now we're opening our eyes to the incredible struggles of people and the gifts and the arts and culture and everything that we are learning. What are your thoughts?
You have to pull from everywhere. And I think one of the things I always, a friend of mine that passed away used to always tell me, your mess becomes your message and your test that you go through become your testimony. And, you know, as you said, we have a balance of a lot of ugly, but a lot of good as well. And one of the things, my perspective in life, we all go through journey, we all have a lot to learn. And if we can look at our mistakes and you know, try not to make them again, then we're going to do a lot better. So I pull from everyone, a little bit from everyone, the past, present, the future. I look, you know, I try to learn from everybody because, you know, I grew up here in Chico and I haven't been a lot of places. I haven't traveled too many places. I got kids, so that makes it hard. So talking to people, learning from different people, and that could just be, you know, politics, finances, moral issues, religion, whatever. I try to learn from a lot of different people because, you know, as you know, the great thing about America is that it's a pot of everyone, a mixed pot, and that's what makes it great. So if we can continue to just listen to people and find things that bring us together rather than divide us. And, you know, I think that's the best thing. No, I can pull from anyone to just find the good and understand we're all trying. And so it's good to see a lot of different people putting in work from a lot of different areas and places. And so I'm inspired by a lot of different people right now.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, you know, as a radio person, I hadn't heard about this show. The show is called People Are Talking About It, So We Are Too. And it's kind of lighthearted, and you have a co-host, and you guys kind of goof around. But you're looking at the pandemic from a mental health perspective. Whose idea was that, and how is it going? I mean, is it continuing? And do you take calls, and how do you do that show?
So it is going on. I'm no longer a part of it, but they do still do a show. I'm not sure if it's still Monday, Wednesday, then Friday. It could just be once a week because, you know, pandemic and life, you know, kind of puts a hold on it. But it's definitely a call. You can call in. They really like to push anyone who's doing anything, you know, positive, you know, like you're doing right now. Who has a positive message, you can call in. Course call and see if they're doing interviews still. I know when I was there, we're kind of doing, you know, some people coming in by themselves, but definitely, you know, talk about different resources that are offered, just different you know, things to help people mentally. I know through the pandemic, you know, we had different contests. They always offer contests and have a lot of different groups and activities throughout the week through the organizations there that they promote and talk about as well. So, you know, I think the title, people were talking about it. So we were just being the mouth for the community and you know, talking about the different, you know, places people can get food or services or just whatever hot topic was going on. It was a fun show. So definitely some people should check out and just tune in. And throughout the week anyways, they play great music. So, you know, count on that with KZFR.
Yeah. So this is a sister station, 107.1, but it's low powered, so you're only going to be able to hear it in Oroville, I think.
Yeah, so you can tune in online to KOYO.FM.
Oh.
People are listening. Yeah, you can go online to tune in there as well. So, like I said, you have to balance it out between you guys' stations. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. Yeah, you have your loves, and you have your like. Oh, okay. But
yeah.
So. It is the voice of the African American Family and Cultural Center, and I was wondering if you could just let our listeners know, or maybe it's totally second or third hand, but how are they doing? Are they going to be able to keep their building on Wyandotte? I've been concerned about what that city council is up to.
So the African American Family and Cultural Center is different than so that's the Southside Community Center, which is, I mean, it's another pillar of the community because the African American Family and Cultural Center uses that a lot for the events that they put on, like Kwanzaa, Juneteenth sometimes, and then, you know, with things virtual, you know, they may do more things there. But, you know, I know that's a center for the community. The Hmong Cultural Center uses it. A lot of the centers in Oroville uses it. So I know this is still a battle. I'm not quite sure of the information and details, but I know if, people definitely can reach out to support them. But it's the Southside Community Center, and it's another pillar of the community that needs to stay within the African-American community.
Right. So needed. So, Josh Edwards, I wanted to ask you about your videography, and are you going to, like, going forward, I know you have a business that's photography, but in terms of your social justice lens, are you going to continue that? Is that your way forward in the world? Keep an eye on things, as they say?
Yes. You know, we all have a purpose and, like I said, a skill and to offer. And, you know, I firmly believe in getting blessed to be a blessing. And, you know, I've been doing it a long time, and I know it's just the power of story, power of visuals and, you know, audio and things like that is a very powerful tool, you know. So I will continue to use it in the way to help and push for any methods that help people get to the next level or grow or, you know, promote some positive change. I feel like that's my duty. So, you know, if there's something needed, I'll like the last rally, I'll be there if I can.
Yeah. And I also want to thank you for your other work in the world, which is to help kids not get hooked on cigarettes. Do you want to say anything about that as a last thing? Because that's a justice issue, too, when these cigarette companies, these tobacco, the tobacco industry gets our kids hooked and then it ends up killing them 20 or 30 years later.
Yeah, you know, that was definitely, it was a change of pace for me. You know, I didn't know too much about the vaping and tobacco industry, and I know it's leans on to people's rights and what they can do. But speaking at BSUs at the high schools in Oroville and working with students and things like that, it really was a big issue, with the youth. You know, they're really targeted by industry people will talk about flavors for everyone, but some of the flavors were a little ridiculous and child-friendly. The fact that they put them in hoodies and sweaters and stuff like that, and, you know, schools were doing interventions and coming in with dogs because they were catching a lot of kids with vaping device. You know, it was something that was easy to get behind. And then we want to talk about Black Lives Matter. You know, tobacco industry is, you know, it's the number one killer of Black lives. So, you know, it's upwards to 45,000 a year. So if we really want to, you know, save our community, and, you know, we've seen the disparities in the COVID with the African American community, I mean, this really plays a big role in that number and the numbers that we see. So eliminating the disparities in that, it can really save a lot of lives, and, you know, a lot of people care about money. We'll save a lot of money, too, in the healthcare costs. So I think it's a win-win for just the African-American community, but also, in return to the country, because healthy lives make, you know, better futures. So I think it was a big change, but definitely a lot of work being done over there at the African-American Family Community Cultural Center with the tobacco. So, you know, get a part of that, and they're still doing work. And the PSA that I'm working on, it's going to be a short film that's going to be played at Merriam Park here at the drive-in on March 7th. So
can you
a short film.
Can you say any more about that, please? We're on our last minute. So promote your work, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's going to be played at Merriam Park March 7th. It's going to be a short film. Haven't really tied down a name yet, but if you be on the lookout March 7th for that to be coming out. And, you can find me anywhere. I'll be around.
And I appreciate you and our community very much. Josh Edwards, thank you for your work. Thank you for the great Martin Luther King Jr. celebration that we had this year. And I look forward to next year. I hope that you have the same enthusiasm and community of support to help you to make it another fantastic year, and that Black History Month continues all year round too, all of the above. So thank you. Do you have any last words? I could give you like 30 seconds. Is there something you would love to tell people?
You know what? Take advantage of every day that you have and make a difference. You know, everyone can offer someone something. And even if that's just a simple opening the door, just acknowledging someone with a smile and a wave, I think that goes a big way. And really appreciate our service workers out there and our healthcare workers, everyone on the front line. So that's all I got. And I appreciate you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm so grateful you mentioned all the service workers who had to go and work through all of this anxiety and fear about this disease. So thank you, Josh Edwards. Thank you very much for being my guest on the Peace and Justice Center and for being on this planet with me. Take care.
Thank you.
All right, bye. All right, so stay tuned for Playing Dead. I want to get the community calendar up for us here, but let me thank my underwriters first. I think that would be a good idea. Love to thank Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals, as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service. And Baker's Birkenstock in Chico and Paradise, open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 5 and on Sundays 11 to 5 and 11 to 4 in their Paradise location. Great. Face masks, social distancing, and sanitized hands are required. There's also curbside pickup available by calling either location. Details are on Facebook at birkenstockchico.com, or you can call them 345-4800.
8080. So let me just put on a song just for a second here so I can get the community calendar up. And thanks for listening, and stay tuned to KZFR. We love you, and we love that you're listening. Here you go.
Time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Megan Hammer. On Saturday, February 13th, the Campfire Restoration Project will be holding a workshop on earthworks called to demonstrate and educate about how to move soil to direct and hold water, prevent erosion, capture moisture for growing, and much more. This is from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Concow Meadows, 13550 Hog Ranch Road, on Saturday, February 13th. You can check out the CFRP Facebook page for details.